Blog Talk Radio.
UJS Radio is not intended for anyone under the age of 18 years old. We reserve the right to say whatever the fuck we want to say because we believe in free speech. And if you do not believe in free speech...
Get the fuck out of here, you stupid cocksucker!
We kill the men, we kill the women, we kill the children, we kill the babies, we kill the blind, we kill the crippled, we kill the crazy, we kill the faggots, we kill the lesbians. I said, God damn it, we kill them all!
And one night, a drawing set me on fire. That wicked fantasy was to see a child burned to death. And after that, I was just left in a garbage can to die.
Try taking some of these dangerous chemicals out of the food and environment and see if there's a turnaround. At least do something instead of ignoring it and increasing the danger to us.
I was a school teacher in my parish school, and I caught a priest molesting a child. They were going to allow this man to remain near the children, and sadly, he's still in a parish today.
There is absolutely no sexual overtone within this procedure, according to the traditional rabbis that perform it. Absolutely.
Sexual or not, you still had a baby's penis in your mouth. That's just...
Okay, have a pleasant day.
Welcome to the Church of Reality. Bitch,
episode 112, Church of Reality, Counterfeiting and Financial Armageddon with Adam Thicke. For those of you who don't know who Adam Thicke is, first of all, the guy's a successful entrepreneur. He has Extreme Kidnapping, which is a successful thrill-seeking business. You know, if you want to live out your wildest adventures, you can have this guy and his team straight up kidnap you out of anywhere. And you can live out something similar to the game with Michael Douglas and Sean Penn. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But I want to say a few things. First of all, the music isn't working right because Blog Talk sucks dick. I think there's some music there. There we go, a little bit. The music you hear in the background now and every week is none other than a production of Skinny Man. If you want his beats and you have a budget and you're serious about your career, please go to ugsforlife.com. Go on the right-hand side of the page, scroll down, and you'll see production. Click on that shit and get at them, only if you're serious. Here's Skinny, who's co-host of the show. How you doing, Skinny?
I'm doing good, Chris. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing real good. I'm doing real good, man. I finally saw that straight out of Compton. And
what'd you think of it, man?
Well, first of all, this will give you a little bit of idea what I'm thinking of it. I'm having a round table on the 10th of September on my dad's birthday. It's called Straight Left Out of Compton, because as entertaining as the film was, I mean, I sat through it.
Right.
I loved it. You know, it was entertaining, but there were so many people that were so vital to that NWA story that were left out, and we're going to have a round table with a huge majority of them, hopefully. Co-hosted by Clientele. He was left out of there. He's the one that introduced Ice Cube to everybody. You know, so,
yeah.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of shit that wasn't told. But let's bring on. We got our other co-host, Elaine, and then we're going to bring on our guest, Adam. How you doing, Elaine?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. We got a hell of a show tonight, episode 112, and it's about counterfeiting and financial Armageddon. I'm not going to tell too much of a story because I want him to do it, but this dude did some fed time for counterfeiting a large sum of money. Let's bring him on right now. This is Adam Thicke, owner of Extreme Kidnapping. How you doing, Adam?
Hey guys. How you doing? I'm good.
This guy is
a
modern-day success story in many ways because, I mean, you also do consulting and stuff. We'll let you get into that. But let's take it way back. Let's start off with the counterfeiting. What made you decide to want to try counterfeiting, and did you think you were going to get away with it?
That's a good question, Scott. You know, because, you know, counterfeiting is it's a very difficult endeavor to begin with. Most people don't even think about that. If you're going to get into crime, you're going to do something easy like sell drugs or, you know, something else, you know. But I got that in my head at really early on that that was the route to go, you know what I mean? And it didn't just start out with, you know, I want to start counterfeiting. It started out, you know, a little bit more innocent, you know, get rich quick schemes, you know, in the back of magazines, you always see these. In 4 weeks, you'll have $15,000 if you follow these simple, easy plans, you know, that type of stuff. And once you get hooked on that get rich quick mentality, at least this was like, you know, back in the day for me, I just said, well, there's got to be an easier way, you know, to make a lot of money. Everyone else is making money fast, right? So I thought about it. I was like, well, what's the fastest way to make money? Make actual money. Okay, so let's try that. So I just jumped into it one time, the time that I actually got busted. I'd been messing around with it for almost 10 years. You know, I'd been reading stuff, and it was really hard to come by. You know, back in the 90s, there wasn't a lot of, you know, the internet was in its infancy. You didn't have instant access to any information you wanted. So you had to really, really dig, you know. And back then there was a small underground book publisher. Actually, there were two. One was called Lumpanix, and the other was called Paladin Press. And these two publishers, you could find books that you'd never find in a library, you know, stuff that you've never seen. It was amazing, you know, and I found this one book on counterfeiting. Of course, I bought it and read it, and it was good, you know, and it filled in a lot of blanks, but it still, it just didn't give enough information. So over the years, you know, like I tried my hand at counterfeiting a couple times. I did what they used to call casual counterfeiting, which is, you know, you got your computer, your laser printer, and a scanner, you know, you try to make money that way. And you know, me and one of my friends had various, we made various attempts at that and had, you know, different degrees of success, mostly not much success, but, you know, a few here, a few there. But I still was not impressed with the overall, you know, the product. I was like, it's just not there. It's not the level of, you know, the big leagues, you know. So years passed, and, you know, I was still involved, and at this point in my life, I was involved in a lot of white-collar crime and things like of this nature, because that was what I had decided to do with my life at the time, was to pursue white-collar crime, and counterfeiting was always like the holy grail of, you know, epic scams in my mind. So I kept doing my research over the years, and, you know, in the meantime, I was doing other stuff, you know, making money, doing other stuff. But finally, I met a guy who was a commercial printer in the town that I lived at the time. And he was, you know, he was a normal guy. He was not a street guy. He was a businessman. He was a well-respected member of the community. He was a zoning board commissioner. He was on the city council. I mean, he printed up the business cards for the chief of police in our town. Okay.
Wow.
So this was a totally legit guy, and here I am running around kidnapping people, you know, wearing an octopus on my head, rapping, you know, being on BET, and you know, committing all these white collar crimes. And so how we met, it was very casual, because I used to go to his print shop and have him print out my flyers for my rap stuff. You know, so I'd be going there all the time, you know, I'll print out these flyers, print out this, print out that. And, you know, of course, when you're patronizing a business a lot, you tend to, you know, talk to the people that are handling your business. And, you know, we became friendly, and over time we started hanging out a little bit here or there, have a drink at a bar or something like that. Well, you know, one time I was at the office after hours, because as a well-liked customer, I was able to come in after hours, and, you know, even if business was closed, I could, you know, give him my work, and he'd take care of it, because he thought it was cool to know a rapper. This was, you know, back in the day, and, you know, I just liked having a legitimate business person that I could hang out with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
somebody that wasn't from the underworld.
Right. You know, he's a legitimate guy. I thought it was cool hanging out with a legitimate guy, and he thought it was cool hanging out with an underground guy, you know. So it was interesting. It was just, you know, how it was at the time. And
this is like Jerry Heller and E.D.E. Pretty much. Well, E.D.E. was
so
Occam's
anyway,
on his head instead of a Jerry.
Yeah. Instead of the jerry curl, but that jerry curl juice was very similar to the octopus ink.
but you know, here you are. You have a business that you know. We'll talk about that in a little bit too. Where you go kidnap people. You're a rapper. You're doing shows and all kinds of stuff, putting out tapes and albums. And then you go to this guy. You meet this guy. At what point do you say, hey man, I want to start counterfeiting money? And what was his reaction?
Well, we'd probably been doing business together for, I'd say, well over a year, probably close to 2 years at the point. And once I, you know, got that status where I could hang out at the print shop after hours, that type of thing. I remember one time I owed him some money for a big print job. And I didn't have it, so you know, time was going by, but I didn't want to, you know, put him in a position where he was like, oh man, this fucking guy, he's not going to pay me. You know, I didn't want to be that guy. So yeah. I was like, hey man, can I come by the print shop later this evening? I got something. And he was like, yeah, sure. So I rolled through, and I had this really nice gold watch it was diamond encrusted. And you know, I wasn't wearing it at the time because I was a big watch guy, so I had a lot of really cool watches. And it was just something that I had, I wasn't using. And I knew he liked fancy, flashy stuff. You know, I just got that sense about him. So I was like, man, I know I owe you some dough on this print job that's been sitting for a couple weeks now. I got a proposition for you. Are you a watch guy? Are you into watches? He's like, yeah, I like watches. I was like, all right, check this out. I show him the watch. I was like, can we call it, you know, can we call it even Steven on this? I'll just give you the watch and, you know, you can cancel that rest of that debt. He's like, oh, hell yeah. I'm like, okay, cool. So right then I knew that he was open to, you know, alternative means of financing or, you know, propositions that may seem unusual. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. Later, the next thing you know, I was like, well, have you ever, you know, you've been printing, you know, in the print business for a long time. I mean, hasn't it ever occurred to you to, you know, print up some funny money? You've never had that thought ever? You know, it was just a casual conversation. He's like, well, I got to admit, I think every print shop guy has had that thought at one time or another. And yeah, one time I did print up a, you know, like a bill. But, you know, I got so nervous, I threw it away right afterwards. And I'm like, oh, so it did cross your mind at some point. And he's like, yeah, of course. I think it's crossed every print shop guy's mind at one time or another. He's like, but I'm not stupid. I'm not going to, you know, ruin my business over this or, you know, something like that. I'm like, well, I mean, you know, what would you have done if you printed a bunch of money? He's like, I don't know. That's the thing. I wouldn't know what to do with it. I'm like, really? Well, you know, I would. I was like, it occurred to me what to do with the money, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, long story short, back and forth. And I explained to him, you know, hey, it's not that hard. I mean, we could totally print up a bunch of money and I could get rid of it. And then we split it half, you know, 50-50. And we eventually agreed on that. I mean, we totally agreed on that. We were like, all right, we're going to keep this a secret. You can't tell nobody. You know, nobody can tell anybody about this. It's just between you and me. That's it. You know, and our plan was to print up $500,000 and then split that and then walk away from it. You know what I mean? We weren't greedy. I mean, you know, people are like, well, print up $10 million and blah, blah, blah. No, dude, you keep it small, keep it reasonable, and walk away and never look back. That's how you're supposed to do it if you want to get away with it. So we thought by being reasonable, you know, we were being smart about it. But, you know, of course, you know, as time goes on, you know, plans change. So anyway, we both mutually agreed to do it. And then we set to work on doing it. And this was back in 2003.
And how did you get caught? Now this was actually after the interview I did with you, or was it before, Adam?
I think you interviewed me in 2005. So okay. This was definitely before that. But in 2005, I was on. I'd already been arrested by the Secret Service, and I was already on pretrial. So I already had like a pretrial agent that I had to report to every week and drop for, and you know go see all the time up down in Detroit at the federal building. So yeah, I was already in 2005 when you did that interview with me. I already had my case, and I was waiting for to see which way it was going to go. You know.
Okay. So that leads us now. Let's jump back to how did you get caught? How did things start going foul?
Well, that's the interesting story there because my partner and I we had a good plan. We had the best equipment you could possibly get. I mean, it doesn't get any better than a commercial print shop. They have actual printing presses. We had the ability to make printing plates. I'm sure some of you guys saw Black Rain back in the 80s. And how valuable those plates actually are. And we made them. And we had everything we needed. We had the special camera. We had a dark room. We had everything. He had all this stuff, or most of this stuff already. The only thing we had to get was the special camera. The camera was huge. It was like the size of a table, a kitchen table, and it was like a $15,000 camera. Some other printing shop was going out of business, so my partner snatched it up for a really, really good price. But remind me about the camera later. I gotta tell you something about these cameras. But anyway, moving on, we had all this, we had everything that you could possibly need. The only thing that we needed to do was build a dark room. Now, in my day-to-day stuff, kidnapping people, I had henchmen, okay? And I had this one henchman who was really, he was a really hardcore dude. He was this big dude, he had all tatted up. He was a rapper. He was also a really good producer. And at the time, he was going to the same studio I was going to all the time, and he was always trying to, he wanted to be on my stuff and rap on my stuff. And because at the time I was, I had a little buzz going, and I was getting, some radio play and stuff like that at the time. So of course, you're going to want to jump on with that guy. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
At the time, I wasn't really interested. I was just kind of feeling myself too much and just wasn't really interested in doing rap stuff with him. But I was willing to give him a shot at kidnapping. And it turned out he was really, really good at it. So I was like, all right, man, cool. So I hired him and, we did a bunch of high-profile kidnappings. We were on TV all the time doing all this, magazines and stuff.
You were on Howard Stern.
I was on Howard Stern. He wasn't a part of that. I took the girls' team to Howard Stern with me, so we mostly just focused on the girls' team at the time with Howard Stern.
That would make sense. Sure, Howard would appreciate that more anyway.
Right, exactly. Howard's not going to want to have a bunch of dudes in the studio. Of course, he wants to bring a bunch of hot chicks in there. So, at the time, I had those people, the hot chicks and stuff. So that was a big part of why we, were on Howard Stern. So, so anyway, this guy is doing a lot for me. He's producing beats for me on a bunch of my stuff. We're hanging out all the time. We're going to the studio. He's doing these epic kidnappings with me. And when you hang out with somebody a lot, really, and do a lot of weird, crazy shit together, you kind of bond faster. You know what I mean?
You tend
to bond faster with people if you hang out with them a lot and do a lot of, you know, unusual stuff together. So I only knew this guy for maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And so it was actually a bit of a jump for me to trust somebody with, you know, a criminal activity on the side, because we were doing all this stuff, but it kind of made me trust him more, you know. So I, you know, one day I hit him with, hey man, I know you, you know, he did his own share of dirt. I knew some stuff that he did. So I didn't think it was a big risk to hit him up with an opportunity to make some big money, you know? So I was like, look, man, I got this thing I'm working on, this operation. It's going to be really big, and I'm going to need a bodyguard for this. And, you know, if you just follow me around when I got to do what I got to do, I'll pay you $15,000. And he was like, $15,000? I'm like, he's like, all I got to do is hang out with you when you go do this stuff? It's like, well, yeah, watch my back, make sure I don't get jacked or anything. He's like, you got it, brother. I'm in. You know, he was down 100%.
Yeah.
So
it
now
be for $15K just for, yeah, doing whatever.
Right.
So,
he's my guy on the side. This didn't interfere with me and my partner's activities because, you know, I kept him insulated from that. He didn't need to know about that. You know what I mean? At some point, I told him, yeah, I got a bodyguard for when I have to go, move all this money around. He's like, yeah, that makes sense, you know, so no big deal. So months are going by. We have all the pieces of the puzzle. We've got the 1980s bills, you know, where the president's heads were really small back in the day.
Yeah.
Because that was back before
they
had a ton of security.
Easily, yeah, they didn't have those strips in there and...
Yeah.
Exactly. It was before all the security features and stuff. And I mean, they had some security features, but they didn't have a whole bunch yet, you know?
Yeah.
So I had procured a really good sample. And then, you know, we started making pictures and doing all the stuff that you needed to do. So there was only like one major step left, and that was we had the inks, we had everything. The only step that was left that hadn't happened yet was ordering the paper. And months went by because I got sucked up in my own life. My partner got sucked up in his life. And shit just started, you know, sort of lagging, right?
Yeah.
Well, my bodyguard comes up to me one day and he's like, dude, I got an awesome opportunity for us. And he tells me this story about one of his friends who he hadn't talked to in years, but is now a bank manager at a bank branch not far from, you know, in a nearby city to us, in Metro Detroit. And he said that, you know, he spoke to him recently and that they're, you know, they went out and had some drinks. And he's like, yeah, my buddy's still the same old guy. I mean, he's got a white collar job now, but he's still down for fast money, you know? And I'm like, well, what were you guys talking about? You didn't tell him about what we're doing. He's like, no, I just kind of hinted around to see, you know, this and that and that and this. And next thing you know, the story comes out that the bank manager is down to, you know, make some kind of a deal. And I'm like, well, what kind of deal? And he proceeds to tell me about how, and this is true, banks do this. They do, when they get the old bills, they stack them up. They don't put them back into circulation. They keep them. And then eventually they go to a burn site and they burn them. They get rid of them because they don't want anybody having the old bills anymore.
Oh.
Okay? So basically it's decommissioned cash that is leaving the banks. So that's where the opportunity came in. My bodyguard proposed, let's just call him Evil Lee because that was his name, Evil Lee. That's what his name was. Not to be confused with Ice-T's former partner.
I was going to say, it's not Ice-T's, you believe, so...
No. This is a different Evil Lee.
DJ Evil Lee, definitely. He wasn't scratching. He was this Evil Lee was counterfeiting, not scratching.
Right, right. So, anyway, the idea was that we would give him a block of funny money in exchange for the decommissioned cash, and they would, and then he would pass off the funny money as a decommissioned cash to go to the burn site, and we would take the old decommissioned cash. Yeah, it's going to be old and wrinkly and old bills, but it's still legal tender. And
yeah,
this was an unprecedented handoff because a lot of people don't know, but in the counterfeiting world, getting straight up dollar for dollar is almost unheard of. It's usually 10% on the dollar is what you get. So for you get a dime for every fake dollar. You know what I mean? Or, yeah. In some case, you get points, but most of it's like pennies on the dollar for the actual cash. You know what I mean?
So it's, yeah, it's, you got to give them a whole lot. Yeah.
Yeah, so to get $100, you give them $100 funny, you get $10. But
yeah,
you're talking the hundreds of thousands or millions, so it does add up. But to get dollar for dollar exchange is almost unheard of. I mean, it was an amazing opportunity. So we were like, holy shit, so I give you 50 G's, and we're getting 50 G's of old, you know, old money, but it's, it
legit,
still spends the same. So, yeah, we were like, wow, this is great. And, but at this point, we still hadn't ordered the paper yet. We were still kind of, you know, my partner was still, you know, he was starting to waffle at this point, and I had a lot of other stuff going on with extreme kidnapping and these other things. So, we, you know, we're just kind of like, eh. I really think that if my bodyguard hadn't really pressed the issue, we probably would have let the whole thing go, because it had been almost 8 months at this point that we'd been working on this stuff, and we always found an excuse, you know, why we can't do it right now. So as this bank thing progressed, it got to a point where things were kind of stagnant, and then finally my bodyguard comes to me, he's like, dude, next week he's going to be ready to do it. They're getting ready to burn a bunch of cash. He's ready to do it. I was like, how much can you bring? I'm like, well, I don't know. I mean, we got to think about this. We don't even have nothing printed yet, you know? So we were thinking somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000. A fairly conservative amount, but enough to actually make it worth our while, because we didn't want to go too big with it, but we didn't want to go too small with it, because we might not have another chance to do this dollar for dollar conversion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I had a bunch of other plans on getting plans for getting rid of the money, but this was an unprecedented opportunity to get dollar for dollar. So we finally kicked the whole thing off into motion. My partner finally made the paper order, and he ordered a lot of paper. Okay, much more than we actually planned on using. I'll tell you about that later. But so once the paper was ordered, apparently this whole thing went into high speed. Now, what you don't know is that my bodyguard had already been arrested months before this. On, you know, the actual what he was arrested for was never fully revealed, but I put the story together on my own, doing my own research, and he was driving a vehicle, wasn't his. He didn't have a driver's license. And I think he had like an 8-ball on him, or a bag of, you know, like a couple ounces of weed, something like that. And rather than take the little hit that he would have gotten, he decided to play a big card for, you know, to totally walk, you know. And we both lived in a area of North Oakland County at the time. And in the small town that I was living in, I mean, he lived a little further north, but in the small town that I lived in, stuff like this was unheard of. And there was only one detective in the whole police department. So for him, this was his, like, career-defining moment. You know what I mean? To get a deal like this. So he's like, holy shit, obviously, a counterfeiting operation. And so my bodyguard, all this time now that I don't know, he's wearing a wire on me. and recording my phone calls. And, you know, we were under surveillance for like 3 or 4 months with the Secret Service following us around in vans and, you know, unbeknownst to me. And I didn't know he was wearing a wire, and I didn't know they were recording our phone calls either. But, yeah, all this was going on. My bodyguard snitched me out. And so when the deal finally came up with the money changing, the bank manager was supposed to meet me on a dirt road out in the middle of nowhere, and we were going to hand off briefcases. You know, it was like some real James Bond shit, you know. And, my bodyguard was going to go with me, and he was wearing a bulletproof vest and, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, we had this big plan on how we were going to do it.
Pretty much.
Yeah. But what I didn't know was if I would have went to that meeting, I would have been meeting a Secret Service agent who would have handed me a briefcase, and then they would have, you know, gang tackled me, and I would have faced way more charges than I ended up facing, you know, alone, you know. So fortunately, it didn't come to that. We never actually got to make the handoff because they decided, instead of doing that particular version of, busting us, they decided to bust us while we were printing the money. Which I'm glad that it happened that way because,
yeah.
I mean, it actually benefited both of us a lot more.
You weren't active spending it or handing it off.
Or laundering.
Yeah.
Because laundering is a 10-year, it starts at 10 years. Laundering is a 10-year felony right there. So that would have added a shit ton of weight to their case if they would have let it go that far. So thankfully it didn't go that far, and they busted us while we were printing the money. Anyway, I wasn't even there when my partner was printing the money. I was at home in bed when he first fired up the presses, and the sheets, the money was coming off the presses and sheets, and it was a bright Sunday morning. I'll never forget it. April 2004. And I get a call from my partner. He's like, hey, I got something really interesting down here. You should come down and check it out. Because we knew never to talk about business on the phone. Everything was very vague between us. And I never talked, I was never overt about anything with my bodyguard either. But it was the context of a lot of the things that we talked about that, you know, made up the snitch tapes anyway. So anyway, I knew our timetable, and I knew he was probably printing. And the way he sounded, it sounded like he was a little excited. So I figured, holy crap, he's got some dough down there. I got to go down there. Let's get this show on the road, you know. So I jump in my car. It's a sunny day. I got a big, giant duffel bag that I figure I'm going to fill it with cash, you know.
Yeah.
I am one happy motherfucker, okay. I drive down there. There's only one vehicle in the whole parking lot. It's my partner's. I go up to the door. I give the knock. Door opens. Now, there's another door immediately to your left that you walk into to get into the print shop. So I'm just in this little tiny lobby. I walk in. Somebody grabs me from behind and pushes me through this other door. And suddenly, I'm surrounded by all these guys pointing pistols and shotguns in my face.
Oh, shit.
And I'm stunned, and I'm thinking we're being robbed. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
We're getting jacked.
Fucking
right.
Robert De Niro and Val Kilmer and shit coming after you, so, yeah.
Yeah, right. I was like, oh, my God, some real gangsters are fucking jacking us right now, you know?
Not
so
the
I'm like,
situation, but it's... I could just imagine.
No, I know, but it's funny now, but at the time, I was like, holy shit, we're being robbed. Wow, I can't believe this is happening. But then the one guy is talking, and he's saying stuff that sounds like stuff a cop would say, and I'm like, wait a minute. You know, everything was moving really slow. It's like you've heard people say that in, you know, really scary situations, time slows down, and it's really true. Time slowed down really slow at those moments there, because I couldn't really hear what he was saying, even though he was right in front of me. But then I started trying to listen, and he was saying stuff like, "You're under arrest. Drop your weapon, drop the bag, don't move, blah, blah, blah," and stuff like this. And I'm like, and I started looking at their clothing and the way they were dressed, and I see agent and Secret Service and all this stuff, and I'm like, oh shit.
Damn.
I was like, I don't know if this is worse or better than being jacked, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So, anyway, I see my partner over in the corner. He's already in handcuffs, sitting in a little chair. He's all red. And, you know, the rest of that day was total shit. You know, of course, they cataloged everything. They confiscated everything. You know, they took their little pictures with their souvenirs and their trophies. You know, the sheets of money and all that. And, you know, the one, the sack, he kept asking me, you know, SAC is a special agent in charge. That's what they call him, a SAC. Anyway, he was like, you know, you can make it a lot easier on yourself if you just tell us, you know, this and that. And he was like, no, I'll just wait for my lawyer. That's all. I wasn't a dick. I wasn't trying to be a tough guy. I just said, no, I'm not saying anything. He's like, all right, no problem. So then, after they got everything they needed, they took us back to the police department, which ironically was right across the street from our operation. Literally right across the street. And it's not like we didn't know that. We knew that. But, you know, we were trying to follow that whole Sun Tzu art of war shit. You know, if you operate underneath the enemy's nose, he will never know what you're doing. And it's true. They never would have known, unless the my bodyguard told them everything. So we walked across, they took us across the street. The police chief was like, he was all right. He was decent to us, you know. My interrogation lasted 5 minutes. My partner's interrogation lasted 45 minutes. So that tells you what he was doing in there. And then we spent the night in the cells, and the next morning the Secret Service came and picked us up, and they took us back to Detroit for processing and arraignment. And we were in the U.S. Marshals lockup in this tower in the middle of the city somewhere, and it was a scary place. It was a really scary time, and I didn't think I was ever getting out of there. I mean, I was like, oh man, we're so screwed. And I just kept telling my partner, I was like, dude, just don't talk to anybody. Don't tell anybody anything. Not these guys, not the guys in the cell with us. Don't say nothing. I was just make up shit. Make up anything you want to say. Just don't tell them what really happened, you know? Because he was a really square dude, and it didn't take much to, you know, pressure him into anything, you know? And I was worried about him doing any more talking than he already did the day before, you know? So that day we got arraigned, and a public defender came down and got us both off on $10,000 OR bonds. And I was like, I was shocked. I didn't think I was getting out of there. I was like, I just couldn't believe it, you know? So when I walked out that day, I'm sitting on the steps of the federal building, and I'm just like, you know, I'm in Detroit, you know, nobody knows I'm there. I don't have a car. I got nothing. I'm just sitting on the steps. I'm like, holy shit. I was so happy to be out of there. It's like, oh my God, thank you, God, you know? So, basically, you know, in federal cases like this, nothing is written in stone, at least not in the beginning. So it's not terribly difficult to get a bond on your own recognizance, which means you sign for it, and if you don't show up to court, then you owe that money. That's how it works.
Damn.
So anyway, that's pretty much how the bus went down, and then they, you know, obviously they got everything and they built their case up for the next 2 years. Fed cases take a long time to go through court. Usually 2 years is pretty average, you know. So, you know, 2 years are going by and I'm still living my life. You know, the only thing is I got this pretrial agent I got to report to all the time. And, of course, I totally went straight. I mean, 100% straight. I was not doing nothing wrong. You know what I mean? So I just and then it was at this time that I got a reality TV series deal with a company in New York. They wanted to do a show for extreme kidnapping. So I'm like, wow, this is fantastic, you know. And so that I signed a deal with them, and then you know they sent their camera crews out that one summer, that 2006. That whole summer we were shooting episodes. We shot the pilot. I mean, we were having a blast. It was an amazing time. So I'm thinking, maybe this whole thing is going to blow over, you know, because at one point my lawyer got the case dismissed, which is interesting. And I want to tell your viewers real quick, listeners real quick about case dismissed. You know, we see all these things on TV, you know, Law and Order and CSI and all this, and the show is 1 hour long, and you know, some guy gets his case dismissed and everyone's cheering, and he leaves court and everyone thinks he got away with it, right?
And they go after him.
I mean, you guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, case dismissed. Everyone seems to think it's done. It's over. Your lawyer got you off. It's not how it works. All that means is they take your case from the top of the pile and they put it at the bottom of the pile. That's all that happened. That's all that it does.
Mm.
It's going to come back. You still got to deal with it. It's just your lawyer bought you another 6 months or a year, you know, or something like that. So that's basically what my lawyer did and my partner's lawyer.
It gave you guys some more time. And during this, you're doing extreme kidnapping, which is a company. Tell everybody about that real quick.
I started that back in 2002, and it's basically it's a kidnapping adventure service. We provide the most realistic, hardcore movie style kidnappings, and you can customize them, or we can create something for you. And the idea, the inspiration for that came from watching that movie, The Game, with Michael Douglas that came out in 1996. Awesome movie. I always knew that something like that would be possible, would be welcomed at some point in time. You know, I knew it was something when I saw it, but I just knew that, you know, in the movie it was only catering to millionaires, and it had become more affordable and interactive and just, you know, more grounded in something that most people could afford, you know, not, you know, like six figures to do it like in the movie. So 2002, I finally started that company, and within 1 week, I mean, I the timing couldn't have been better, because it was September and I issued a nationwide press release, and it just blew up. Within 1 week, I was doing news segments, features, magazines, newspaper stuff all week long, and it just kept going from there. I mean, it just blew up fast, and it just kept going. And then, you know, Howard Stern came around after that, and then Maxim magazine, FHM, Playboy, Marie Claire, Eve, even women's magazines were jumping on it, which was pretty unusual.
Well, you had a
it was. Yeah, but see, we didn't have the women's team right away. We didn't get them until.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't add them until about 1 year later. Yeah, so that's probably when the women's magazines probably jumped in. It was probably once the women's team was added. So, but yeah, so I mean, it blew up pretty quick, and it was an amazing time. I mean, we had a blast back then, especially in Metro Detroit, where everyone knew us. Everyone, you know, even the cops knew what we were up to. You know, it was a really crazy, unique time. But, you know, it's not like that anymore. It's definitely not like that anymore. But yeah, it was actually the, I'm actually selling the company at this point just because I'm burnt out on it. I'm ready to move on to other things. I have other projects I want to work on. And, you know, somebody else can be the kidnapping kingpin and, you know, do that.
Yeah, yeah. But you've had, I mean, you said you've done a high profile. Have you ever had people come in from other countries that wanted to do this? Because like you said, you were all over the news. The exposure had to have reached pretty much all across the globe.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We've kidnapped reality TV stars, people from other countries. I mean, next weekend, a guy from the UK is flying in for a kidnapping that we're going to do down in New Orleans. The last kidnapping we did, ironically, was another person, a woman from the UK flew in. So, I mean, we get people flying in from other countries to do this. Like I said, we've kidnapped reality TV stars and just regular people, of course, you know. But this is going now on 13 years, and a lot of media that hits us up these days thinks this is new, thinks we're something new.
Yeah,
and they're
right.
Shocked to find out that we've been doing this for 13 years, you know. So
yeah.
It's interesting.
Crazy, I had to cut you off. I remember you guys would pull a caper or, you know, a kidnapping, and people would think it was real and call the cops, wouldn't they?
I have to assume it's happened a few times. I know one time we were in Pontiac, Michigan, and it's the only time that we really came into full contact. I mean, we had a couple of little minor incidents with the police, but they just pulled us over because it was they saw that the girls team were doing it, and they just wanted an opportunity to chat with the ladies. That's all that was, you know.
Oh,
but
cops would hard date.
Yeah, they just right. They saw them in their little schoolgirl uniforms, and they were like, "Oh, let's pull those guys over," you know. So, but there was one time where we did come in full contact with the police. We were doing a kidnapping in Pontiac, Michigan, and there was this plaza that we were driving around in. I had this Caprice Classic with tinted windows, and we were all wearing ski masks. And, you know, I was wearing glasses and a hat, but all my guys were wearing ski masks. And we actually had Fox News with us, Fox News cameraman in the passenger seat, and the reporter was hiding in the parking lot under a car, which is kind of funny. But the client was in one of the stores with his girlfriend, and we had gotten in a little parking altercation with a guy in a white van, and he was just being a dick. We were just trying to back out, and my hot-headed bodyguard, same guy, you know, that snitched us out, he hung his head out the window wearing his ski mask and flipped the guy off and told him to get the hell out of the way wearing the ski mask. Okay.
Damn.
So
the guy. Right. And, you know, the car looks shady as hell to begin with. You know, all tinted windows, big Caprice Classic.
Dude,
you know,
half naked women.
Yeah, well, the chicks weren't with us for this.
Oh, they weren't with you.
No, it was just, this was a henchman kidnapping, because we never really worked together. It's either a elite girls squad kidnapping or a henchman kidnapping. They were totally different apples and oranges sort of things. So this was a henchman thing. We were supposed to really jack this guy and, you know, kidnapping really hard and stuff. So this guy in the white van takes off. He's all pissed off. You could tell he was pissed off. He takes off. And we were like, you know, we didn't think nothing of it after that. Turns out he was an off-duty Detroit cop, and he thought we were robbing. We were there scoping out the joint to rob the place. So he called the Pontiac Police Department. Now, we're in the parking lot, and I pulled off to the side a little bit away from all the cars so I could still see the doorway where the guy was going to come out of the store. And we're just sitting there chilling, just waiting, you know. Next thing you know, I see a cop car whoosh in. I see another one, and I'm like, dude, look at all these cop cars. And we're like, wow, where are they going? And they drive right up to us and surround us in a big circle. The whole Pontiac Police Department was there. Okay. they surrounded us and they jumped out with their guns drawn. And I was said, you guys, don't move a muscle. Don't twitch. Don't do nothing. Let me handle this. So I didn't, you know, I knew they were going to do a felony stop. I mean, we were already stopped. I knew they were going to, you know, throw my keys out the window and all that. So I just followed their orders. I got out of the car. I moved real slow. I walked to the back of the car. And this is back in the days when, this is before they shot everybody first and asked questions later. This is back when they asked questions first. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, for the most part.
So I went back to the, you know, the back of the car. The sergeant's asking me all these questions, you know, what are you doing here? What's going on? Blah, blah, blah. I'm telling him, I whip out my business card. I give him my extreme kidnapping business card. He's like, what the hell is this? And, you know, I even had a sticker on my car, a big one that said extreme kidnapping and the, you know, the website and everything. And he just wasn't buying it. He wasn't like, I've never heard of such a thing. It's, you know, doesn't make any sense to me. And so I'm trying to explain everything. I'm like, look, there's even a Fox reporter hiding over there under that car over there. They're here, you know, and, you know, he saw her, he talked to her. You know, of course, there's like 20 cops walking around. And there were a couple sheriff's deputies from the sheriff's department. It was fortunate for us that they were there because they knew who we were because the sheriff himself had been interviewed by all the news media about us. So obviously there was an interoffice memo and they all knew who we were. So the sheriff's deputies told the Pontiac Police Department, hey, you guys, this is just it's all fake. These guys aren't really robbing the place. They're just probably kidnapping some guy. It's a fake thing people pay for, you know? And they're like, really? And they're like, yeah, it's not illegal. It's a contract they signed. You know, they didn't do anything. You have to let them go eventually. So they were flabbergasted, but sure enough, they let us go. They just said, they just banned us from Pontiac. They said, don't ever come back here and do this shit again. You know?
Yeah. Let's stay out. Now, during this time, you know, you the business has taken off. And do you still have DVDs available, by the way? I want to mention that to the listeners.
I do still have, like, a small amount left. I don't think there's but 30 left. And I don't plan on repressing anymore because it's the last of the DVDs. They're on eBay, and they're on Amazon, too.
Oh, okay. But they can go to extremekidnapping.com and get more info and whatnot.
I mean, you could always just go to the website and just send me an email or something, and I could send you a link or whatever.
Okay. Well, okay, here you are. This business has taken off. You're getting all this media coverage. But a few years prior, you counterfeited, or you were about to counterfeit a bunch of money, and you got caught. What happened to you when they brought back up your case?
Well, when my case finally got to the sentencing phase, which was in late 2006, my show was almost, I mean, we shot the pilot, the production company was so certain with their connections at the network that it was going to get green-lighted. We were already planning our party, you know, to celebrate and stuff. So we're thinking, wow, this is going to be great, you know. I mean, we were all looking like celebrity, you know, reality stars and shit, you know. So we're all excited about this. But then the sentencing comes up, and I'm thinking, you know, I had gotten a lot of great letters on my behalf, you know, character letters, and, you know, I had just done everything that my pretrial agent wanted, and I'd been clean for 2 years. You know, I'd done everything right. So I had a really good lawyer, too, and I thought that I was going to get home confinement. I thought I'd get, like, you know, maybe 15 months of home confinement or something like that. So needless to say, I was shocked and stunned when the judge sentenced us to 27 months in federal prison.
Mm.
I mean, I couldn't believe it. I probably turned white as a piece of paper. I know my partner did. He almost passed out. But yeah, it was a really sobering day. I remember having to go home and tell my girlfriend what happened, and it was pretty devastating. And of course, the production company was there to witness all this, and they wanted to record everything. So, you know, here I'm crying and, you know, to my girlfriend, you know, this is messed up, and they're filming everything. So I'm like, because you can't get away from it. Once you sign those type of deals, they're everywhere. They follow you everywhere, you know. So I got sentenced to 27 months. I was supposed to start. I got what they call self-surrender, which means they don't take you into custody right after sentencing. It means you get to turn yourself in at the prison that you get designated to. So you wait for your letter in the mail, and it comes and says, okay, you're going to this prison or that prison. And I got sent to a prison in Minnesota, Rochester, it was, a big high-security facility, which I didn't know about at the time, because I was camp eligible. I should have got minimum security status, and I get shipped to a high-security prison. That's a whole other story. But anyway, I had my lawyers keep delaying my surrender 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. And after a while, it was just like, you know what? I mean, he could have kept delaying and delaying and delaying, and they'll keep granting it to you. I mean, at least they did us, because I don't know. They just, my lawyer knew what he was doing. So, but you get to a point where it's like, this thing is hanging over your head. You know, you're sick all the time. You're having nightmares and stuff. You just want to get it over with, you know? So, I wanted to do Christmas, and then I was like, I'm going to go turn myself in. So January 3rd, 2007 is when I turned myself in Minnesota and began serving my federal prison sentence.
And how long were you down for, Ed?
I did an actual 18 months in two facilities. I was in Minnesota, and then I secured my own transfer to Colorado to get into a camp, which was no small feat. I was the only person in Rochester's history, 20 years, that ever secured his own transfer to another a lower facility, and I got them to send me in a private jet, too. I was the only person in 20 years that ever got that. But that's from spending every waking moment in the law library. So that's how I pulled that one off.
So you just taking advantage of the time. Yeah, well, that's all you got in there is time, so might as well.
Exactly.
Books. Well, okay, you serve your sentence. You get out.
Well, once I got out, I still had more time to do. I still had another 6 months of home confinement, and then I had 3 years of supervised release. So it was, you know, the 18 months, yeah, it was hard, but it's that time that you're out. But on paper still, that's even worse in some ways, because they're, you know, the home confinement was nice for like the first month and a half, you know, because you're so thrilled to eat regular food and wear clothes and, you know, just watch whatever you want and just talk to your friends and family. So for, you know, 45 days or so, you're thrilled. But then the reality of home confinement sinks in, and how they have you bent over a barrel, and they try to trip you up, and they do. At least where I was at, the halfway house I had to report to, they had it in for me, and they were trying hard to send me back. So that was more stressful, I'd say almost as stressful, if not more stressful, than actually being in prison in some ways. So yeah, I mean, after that 6 months, then I had 3 years of supervised release. I finally got done with the whole mess back in 2011. And that's when it finally ended.
And you know, we're going to talk. I mean, you know about money. Before we get into what you're currently doing, I want to talk about money, because I mean, you counterfeited it. You served time for it. You You had successful, I mean, you run successful businesses. What's going on, you know what I'm saying, with this financial Armageddon? I've seen commercials, you know, with Ron Paul talking about a collapse. We just had the Dow drop, what, 1,000 points the other day. We all know we're fucked, but what, from what you know, what's going on, Adam?
Well, I spent a lot of time, you know, these days, you know, studying finance and, you know, researching, you know, the economy and, you know, the different things that are going on, you know, globally as well as our own economy, because all the economies now are linked because of central banking. So, you know, like you said, Ron Paul, he's been saying for a long time now that our system is going to collapse. It can't do nothing but collapse. And he's not the only one. You know, you've got Jeff Berwick saying systematic market crash September 15th next month. John Shorey, economic collapse September 2015. Bloomberg News, the Fed setting itself up for recession. Mark Faber, global recession. I mean, I can name like 10 other guys. Bill Holter, he's a gold expert. You already mentioned Ron Paul, Bill Bonner, Gerald Celente, Harry Dent. I mean, all these experts, they're all saying the same thing, that our financial system, it can't last anymore. It's on its way out, and we'll likely see this in our lifetime, if not in the next couple months, in the next couple years. I mean, no one can pinpoint the exact time, but like Michael Rupert said back in 2006, there's only two big bubbles left in the world. One is China. After that, it's the human bubble. And what's happening right now in China, they just devalued their currency, and that's what's caused, you know, our stock market to crash. Well, partially, not completely. It's just one symptom of a larger problem. But, you know, you see what's happening in Greece. That's going to happen all throughout the whole Eurozone. You know, Portugal, Spain, all those countries are teetering on the brink of collapse themselves. And Germany's not going to be able to bail out everybody, you know. So the Eurozone's going to crash. The whole thing's going to come apart because all markets are linked. All economies are linked. You know, there's too much debt globally. Debt saturation goes back to 2008 when they bailed out everybody. But the bailouts didn't fix the problem. It just bailed out the banks. You know, you can't make bad debt good by adding liquidity. It's just more debt, you know? So yeah. What's going to happen this time is not only are we going to see the stock market crash, but there's going to be a credit system shutdown. And a credit system pretty much moves business. It moves everything. And that's going to be the real killer. Because, you can survive a stock market crash if you don't have money in the market, but credit rules everything. You know, car loans, mortgages, business loans, and there won't be any more credit, you know. And then add into this equation a currency crisis, which is bubbling. Now, look to October when we'll hear some kind of big announcement from the IMF. A lot of people think it's going to be about a new reserve currency, and a lot of people think it's going to be the yuan, the Chinese, I don't know if I said it right, the yuan, Y-U-A-N, or the renminbi, whatever, which, if that's the case, if that becomes one of the reserve currencies, because right now the dollar is the reserve currency of the world, you know. Yeah. But if we lose that reserve currency status, billions and hundreds of billions of dollars will literally move overnight after that announcement into other currencies. And it's going to be catastrophic for the dollar. It's going to like turn into a piece of worthless. I mean, it's already a worthless piece of paper.
It's already got so much debt anyway, yeah.
So imagine
the only thing
after
keeping
this,
it up is
what's going to happen.
Right, right. The only thing keeping it up now is confidence in it. There's no gold backing. There's nothing backing it. It's not worth anything. It's just confidence in it, you know. And it's all debt. It's all debt based, you know. And you know, like when the credit system goes down, that means the distribution system goes down as well. That means the truckers that get our stuff to the grocery store, that all comes to a grinding halt. That's why it's really scary, because this is going to be unlike anything we've ever experienced in our lifetimes. We don't know what this type of thing looks like. We've heard about the Great Depression. We know how it affected, you know, some of our grandparents and stuff, but we still have nothing to compare to that, because what's coming next is going to make the Great Depression look like, I hesitate to say a picnic, because it definitely was not a picnic, but it's going to be much, much worse.
It's going to be a lot of bread lines and soup kitchens. It's going to be pretty much one big giant homeless shelter mixed with violence and because, like I said, I'm going straight into the rich suburbs. I'm going right into the rich houses because they got the good shit. They don't have the knockoff brands. They got the good food. The good everything. They got the money. I'm coming into your house unless you got it locked up pretty tight. But no, shit's gonna get like it's gonna get Mad Max, ain't it, Adam?
In the cities, you don't want to be in a big city at all. I mean, it's gonna be way more dangerous in the cities, even mid-sized towns. I mean, there's really no segment of society that's going to be fully insulated from it, because even if you live way out in the woods, yeah, you'll have a degree of insulation, some protection, but you're still going to feel the effects when you can't go to the grocery store and get what you want, when you can't go to the ATM machine and get, you know, more than $50 out in a day. It's going to affect everybody, you know. Right now, if you see what's happening in Greece, you can get an idea of, I mean, the people are suffering there right now. I mean, they are really suffering. And, you know, the news don't talk about it because they don't want people knowing about that, you know. But, you know, they're limited to $60 withdrawals per day. And most people that don't live in the city have to take a cab to get to the city, and it costs them $40 to go in and pull out their $60. So at the end of the day, they have $20. You know what I mean? And they have to do this every day just to get access to their cash, you know? That's just one problem. That's just one problem. So, yeah, of course, they're resorting to bartering. You know, the black market has opened up. But, you know, a lot of the Greeks saw what was coming, and they took their money out months before, you know, before their collapse.
Just
people
like
are doing that now.
Yeah, they're leaving the country. They're taking their money out and getting the fuck out of here, I heard. Didn't you hear stuff
right,
like that?
Right, yes. Lots of people are doing that with their own money now here, slowly, quietly moving their money out of banks, out of their accounts. And I'm already starting to see, you know, limits for how much cash you can take out. It's getting smaller and smaller every couple months. And another thing a lot of people don't know is, like, I'm sure everyone listening has heard of FDIC, the FDIC insurance that supposedly protects all our accounts.
Yeah.
Well, earlier this year, they quietly changed the rules so that there is no insurance on your accounts anymore. Not like we understand it. What they did is they turned everybody into an unsecured lender. So now you're an unsecured lender to your bank. You're lending them your money unsecured. It's unsecured loan. So now we're all just loaning our money to the banks so that if anything goes wrong and they declare, you know, a banking holiday, that's what they call it, and that would probably either happen on a Friday or a Sunday. But if you hear anything like that, immediately try to go get pull as much cash out of the bank as possible. But what would happen is instead of a bailout this time, there'll be what they call bail-ins. The banks will bail themselves out by giving their account holders what they call a haircut, and they might say, like, okay, if you have more than, you know, $5,000 in your account, we're going to confiscate 30%. And in an attempt to recapitalize their losses from all the money that's fleeing the banking system right now. So you got to be really paying attention
to us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They already did a beta test for this in Cyprus a couple years ago. They stole everyone's account money. Not the whole, you know, not the whole account, but they gave everyone a big haircut, you know, and it was a beta test to see how the people would react. And they managed it in such a way that there were no riots. People didn't trip out about it. So, you know, now it happened in Greece, and watch for it to happen in, you know, places like Spain, Portugal, Ireland. I mean, a whole bunch of Euro countries are so in debt, they're bankrupt, just like we are. I mean, we're right there with them. It's just that we have the whole petrodollar scheme to fall back on. You know what I mean? That's what that and the reserve currency status is what is propping us up. But in October, you know, the reserve currency stuff might change. And then, of course, you know, the financial collapse could happen at any time. I mean, $18 trillion in debt, $300 trillion in unfunded liabilities. I mean, there's nowhere to go but down. There's nowhere to go but down.
Why don't a fucking gamma ray from the sun just hit the earth and flash burn us all to death? I mean,
right.
You know,
I mean,
it's just horrible what's to come, you know, especially if you're having kids or if you're thinking about having kids and bringing them into this world right now, man. It's fucked up. I look at my daughter, you know, I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, what has she got? What has she got to inherit from us, you know?
Right.
But, okay, we're pretty much this financial Armageddon, and we've known it since the housing market collapsed. They're fucking with people's money hardcore then, just straight stealing it from them. And they rape us every day as it is. You know, the income tax, first of all, income tax is straight robbery. You know, all it's doing is basically paying for the salaries of these life-term politicians. And these state employees who get these incredible, enormous pensions, even after they retire, for the rest of their lives. We're paying for these fucks. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's... And but then they say blame the poor. Let's blame the poor. Let's blame the people that ain't got shit or the people that are sick. No, it's these criminal cocksuckers on Wall Street and these assholes on Capitol Hill we need to blame. And these rich corporate fucks. It's crazy, Adam. It really is, man. I hate to see this happening, you know, but
it's a scary time. I mean, it's a fascinating, but it's also a really scary time to be alive. I mean, we're seeing things that are unprecedented, and so many things are happening so fast that it's almost impossible to you know, fathom all these things that are happening, but.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to just leave a few ideas on, you know, a few things that people should probably do. And this is not me saying this. This is like tons of people saying this, you know, like financial experts, prepping experts, you know, security guys, military people, because it is going to get pretty bad. And we have a little window of time to try to prepare and get, you know, get some stuff ready for ourselves and our families. One thing you can definitely do is if you have a lot of, you know, several accounts, only keep as much money as you need to pay your bills in any one account. Don't keep any excess money in any accounts because you're not making any interest anyway. So you're just lending that money to the bank. Who's going to steal it from you eventually. So keep that shit at home, you know, keep it at home. I mean, it sounds, you know, it's, Well, yeah. Well, now you can buy all these little cool little hidden safes and stuff so you can hide your shit all over the house. No one would ever suspect it, you know. Like in a bottle of vitamins or a toilet paper roll or something, you know. They got all kinds of cool places, book safes and things like that. But, yeah, and if you have a lot of accounts, spread your money over all your accounts. Don't keep it all in one or two accounts because some banks are going to fail before other banks. And say you got four accounts. If you want to say one of your banks fails, okay, you're going to lose that little bit of money in that one. But now you still have three others you can pull out of before they fail. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So spread your money over as many accounts as you can. Take all excess cash out of the bank. Keep it at home. Keep it wherever you want to keep it, but just don't leave it in the bank because the bank is not going to give you a warning when they declare a banking holiday and decide
to, you know,
they're not going to tell you that shit. No.
They're going to leave you high and dry. You know, no concern for you or yours. Just like the medical industry, just like the big pharmaceutical companies, what they do to you. Horrible. Okay, man. Let's fast forward a little bit to modern times, Adam. You're wanting to sell extreme kidnapping, but what are you doing now, though?
I do a lot of consulting, mostly. Like, I consult for some TV production companies. Basically, I try to find, you know, people that are interesting people, you know, characters. Maybe they have a cool business. And I try to get them, reality TV deals. I get pitched a lot of material. A lot of people pitch me their shows. I critique them, evaluate them, and if it's good, I'll pitch it to my network. So basically, I try to get people deals for their, you know, reality shows and stuff like that. And then, of course, I do some security consulting. With my background in kidnapping, I've also studied anti-kidnapping and kidnapping prevention. I've taken some security courses with professional anti-kidnapping experts. And so I can do threat assessments, risk management, you know, how to prevent a kidnapping, what you should do if you ever get kidnapped, that sort of thing. And then, you know, various things with the prison industry. Like I can show people how to shave time off their sentences, you know, how to navigate the federal system, pre-trial and post-trial sentence reduction stuff. I do a little computer consulting
stuff. The stuff that you learn on your case, you're able to help others now.
Right. And it's a very convoluted system, and there's a lot of stuff that, a lot of landmines and a lot of stuff that just nobody's going to tell you. Not even your lawyer will tell you because he doesn't know. You know, so there's a lot of stuff that people just don't know. But if you go through the system, you'll find out because there's definitely ways to mitigate your circumstances and, you know, make it a little easier on yourself if you know the system going in. And of course the BOP system is different too, so there's a lot of different things. But yeah, I mostly consulting in those three areas, and then of course I still do some extreme kidnapping when we get a client. But like I said, I'm ready to sell that, move on, and just work on other projects.
Well, I'll tell you what, Adam. I've known you for a while. I met you through the Homie Six. It's been a long time. It's always a pleasure to interview you. And I want to thank you once again for sharing your story with us. Hell of a fight. I mean, that's a movie right there. I mean, you could make a movie about the extreme kidnapping and incorporate the counterfeiting and all that, too. So if anybody wants to get at you, though, as far as your consulting or any of your services, what's the best way to reach you?
Probably just go to the website, extremekidnapping.com. My email is adamthick@extremekidnapping.com. And you can always reach me through the website or my email.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, man. I want to thank you for coming on the show. I want to make a sad announcement. If anybody that's familiar with the films Beyond Treason, Enemy of the State, not the one with Will Smith, the documentary, Don't Tread on Me, 9/11 in Plain Sight, which you can see on Netflix. William Lewis passed away recently. This guy, he made probably close to a couple dozen films, if not more. He's been on Alex Jones. His wife, Debbie Lewis, she's actually been on our show several times, and she's had me and Six on her show. Hell of a woman. We're very sorry for her loss, and we're sorry, William is gone. I mean, the guy, he really opened up a lot of eyes for a lot of people. Those films really paved the way for the truth movements. You know, he made the conspiracy theorists seem legit, and others like him. You know, and he wasn't a wacko like Alex Jones is, just to a degree. You know, this guy, he brought you facts. I mean, if you watch the movie Beyond Treason, it shows you how the government completely used the soldiers and the military as test subjects. You know, so it's a huge loss for anybody that's in the knowing the truth about what the government does to people. You know, and truth be told, when Debbie was on one of our shows, she said that somebody robbed him while he was promoting one of his movies, and he woke up in the hospital with his kidney removed. So, I hope nothing happened to him. And we need to get Debbie. I need to reach out to her and talk to her, and hopefully, he wasn't murdered. But nonetheless, he's still gone. So rest in peace to William Lewis. Shit, man. Is there anything anybody else wants to say before we get out of here? Skinny Six?
No,
Adam?
No.
I was going to say thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, bro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we appreciate you, man. You're welcome anytime. Anytime you want to jump in the co-host seat with us, too, feel free. We cover all different topics. Go to the website, ugsforlife.com. Check it out. We're constantly adding things every day. You got all kinds of services available. And again, go to extremekidnapping.com. Now, you're selling this company.
That would have been a good show to have him and, old boy, I'm from the Bunny Ranch.
Yeah.
Kidnap one of his bunnies.
Yeah, you can kidnap one of the bunnies. Actually, we got a caller here. Maybe we'll take a caller before we go. 757 is Virginia. What are you doing out there, Virginia? What's up? All right.
Jesus fucking Christ, are you deaf?
Fuck. No, they're gone. They're gone. They're off the board. They're off the board completely. 323. 323, you got a question for our guest, Adam Thick of Extreme Kidnapping?
Yes. Yes, Adam, I have a financial question. What do you see California financially?
What was the question?
What do you see happening? And you talked about the coming financial Armageddon. What about in the state of California? Is it a place should people invest in, or they should leave, or...
I definitely would not invest in California, and if anything, I would be trying to get out of California as soon as possible.
Hey, Westside, okay. Let me ask you a question real quick.
How about Atlanta?
Or like, fuck Atlanta, right?
What? Don't talk about Atlanta. We good.
Hey, Westside, you fucking scumbag.
Hey, Westside, let me ask you a question.
You shit-talking faggot.
Are you talking? Are you talking some shit on the YouTube pages, man?
Who?
You.
You stupid giblet head.
What?
No. Right. Why?
Well, we kind of figured it was you, Westside, because you're just the right guy to blame. But
why am I the right guy to blame?
Because there's a fucking dummy on YouTube named African Kush who likes a bunch of black Israeli bullshit, you fucking noob cyborg looking motherfucker.
There you go.
It's not
there
me,
you go.
Man. I know
whatever. You guys. And he's just as illiterate as you are, too. He spells stupid, and he even talks like you, the way he fucking types. either he's the same kind of retard you are, or he's just you.
Pretty close. But I will say this though, when you had that, when you came on that show and you had that debate, that there was a whole different Willie. How do you turn on and off the stupidness and the intelligence?
I just asked a question about the financial problems in California. That's all that's all I want to know. You know.
Oh, okay.
I want to thank him for giving me the right answer.
You're a giblethead,
right,
Willie.
Take care. Take care, okay,
bro.
Willie.
Fucking retard, motherfucker.
He was gonna say fuck Atlanta. He don't like Atlanta, Elaine. You might have to go meet him in the middle of the map and knock him out. But
he's a
hell of a show,
baby.
Adam. That was West Side.
What's
you
that?
Just got to meet West Side Willie, Adam. He calls in on very rare occasions. Between him and Alex the Fairy, you know, those are our regular callers. But thanks again for not only telling your story, but informing our listeners about what's about to happen to us. We're pretty much all fucked.
Yeah,
check
that's
us out.
Right. I agree.
What's that, Elaine?
I said I agree, you know, just like, I can't think. Yeah, I agree. I think the dollars, the banks are about to fold here. You know, I agree with what he said about taking your money out of the banks and all of that. But I do want to say, I don't know where I know you from, Adam Thick.
You're thinking, you know what you're thinking of? You're thinking of Alan Thick from
no,
Growing Pains.
Adam.
It's a good show. Yeah, you were great in that, by the way, Alan. No. You might have seen him on the news. I mean, Adam's been on a lot of TV news shows and whatnot. His company was featured on, Stern, Fox,
Howard Stern.
I mean, all kinds of stuff.
Playboy did them.
Yeah, we've gotten a substantial amount of publicity over the years, tons of it, really. So you could have seen us anywhere, you know. Interviews or maybe a radio show possibly or something?
Probably. I don't know. Maybe it was on Fox News. I don't know.
Might have been on Fox News. That's a probability for sure.
Your name is very familiar.
I would also add, too, in addition to, minimizing your exposure to your bank accounts, is, be realistic. I mean, people buy, car insurance, they pay for homeowners insurance, hoping they're never going to need it. Well, buy extra food, buy storage food. That's the most important thing you're going to need is food, and that's insurance. That's hunger insurance, what I mean? And, and if nothing ends up happening, hey,
clean
you still got
water.
The food. You're not out anything, what I mean?
Real life insurance.
That's why they don't want us collecting rainwater. They don't want nobody to be prepared for shit. We had the Doomsday Prepper on the show a couple months ago, and he was talking about it. And they got the show on TV, and people think they're crazy, but no, man. If
they're
you
not.
Don't save food and water back, you're fucking crazy. You're just
right,
stupid.
Exactly.
You gotta have
something.
And
that's something. The thing too. You gotta start storing up food. It's common sense.
Pet food. What are you going to feed them? I mean, shit.
Exactly.
You have to think about everything.
And
I got
also
fucking
water.
Tortoise
you gotta...
I want to see to live to be 80 years old. What am I going to feed him? Jesus Christ.
You got a tortoise, really?
I got a Russian tortoise, man, a Rusky. He looks like Ivan Drago with a shell. He's badass, though. I tell you. He's a bad motherfucker.
Those things
I'll
live
send you
forever.
A picture of him. No, I got it for my daughter about 3 years ago. Just feed the fucking thing kale and collard greens and put him out in the sun, and he's good. He's nice, man.
That's
I'll send
great.
You a picture of this motherfucker. Call him
yeah,
Rocco.
I definitely. I love tortoises. They're great.
They're a good pet. They're simple. They don't cost that much. They don't bother. They don't whine. They don't cry like a fucking kitty cat and whine
like a bitch.
Yeah.
They might outlive you though.
Yeah, it's my daughter, so, she's going to take them. But, definitely. I'd have to will them out to somebody. Same thing if you get one of those fucking parrots. Those things will live 80 years, too.
Yeah, that's true.
But people, people, man. Just, you know, I mean, we never, when we do these radio shows, we never know if we're going to get to do one next, you know, Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday. You know, the, like, if shit collapses, this might be the last time we ever talk to each other. You know, I mean, you just don't know. And it's scary. It's a scary situation we're all in. So yeah, I wish you all the best. I'll see you guys next week. I don't know what we're going to do next week, but I'm sure we'll come up with something for episode 113.
Man, y'all getting up there in numbers, too. Jesus, good shit.
This show, I mean, we've done, you know what's crazy, Six? We've done so many different topics and covered so many different things. It's just so hard to find guests, you know, and I thought, man, you know, we've had Adam tell a story on the podcast, but we never had him here, so I thought perfect opportunity. And if you guys know of anybody that wants to come on here and tell the story, hit us up, ugsforlife.com. You know, check out the website. Get at myself, Skinny Elaine, Six, Mac, whoever.
You know. Don't talk to me without money.
Yeah. Not counterfeit money, though. You know, we want the legit shit. Even if it's from 1800 and something, I don't give a fuck.
Oh my god, I'll take old tiny doubloons. Just give me something.
Yeah. I'll take pesos. At this point, I'll take fucking pesos. I mean, Jesus,
what you
want to
be taking right now is gold
down
and silver.
Anyway.
That's what you want to take. Gold and silver. That's
what
you want
to take.
No,
then I do want doubloons. Fuck it. I'll take doubloons for sure. Give me the sack of the cursed Aztec jewels and shit too. I'll take all that.
Yeah.
You know, we ought to do like the UGS Goonies and go looking for One Eye Willie's fucking treasure. I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
No, man, why did I hear for the past 2 weeks people are finding gold and shit in the fucking water in the beaches and shit now, man? It happened twice last week. I hear about, 4 million found in gold in the... I'm going to start swimming again, man. Fuck this.
I was going to say, man, you could have King go out there and retrieve fucking gold nuggets.
Yeah.
Show him what it looks like. He'll be bringing them back to you all day long. Shit, we're out of here. We'll see you guys later. UGSforLife.com. Church of Reality next Sunday, 9 p.m. Central, KFYB, Saturdays, 7 p.m. on the West Coast.
5 on the West. 7 Central.
5 on the West, 7 Central, something like that.
I don't know the East, though.
I don't even know what... Do you even know what I'm doing this week?
I think it's 8 p.m. on the East, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Thursday, we got Kay Reno. Monday, we got Sin Loke from the Bloods and Crips, if you guys remember Banging on Wax.
Fucking classic.
And then... we got the Straight Left out of Compton roundtable. That's for all the people that were not in the story. So that's going to be interesting.
You got Tony,
a lot of
fucking people. Tell me you got the real Tony motherfucking G in there. My favorite Compton MC.
No. He'll be in the Mexican version of the. He'll be playing the Mexican NWA.
Awesome. Straight out the barrio. Yeah.
Straight out
it.
The barrio. I've actually, you know, Darkroom Familia, they had one like that. I think it was called Straight Out the Barrio or something like that.
They better sue Tony G. Get on it. You know he's doing it right now.
Yeah.
Oh, that dude's thugging for real. So.
Dude, Tony G has the movements. Look at his videos. He's doing all of easiest fucking movements when he has his fucking goofy
look at this. They need to make a biopic on West Side Willie. I mean, that dude, he's a legend. I mean, we've known about him for years. All right, we're out of this, bitch. We'll see you guys next week. Fuck off.
Peace.
Good night.